partners, and we're also recording this presentation as a podcast, so you can download and take it with you if you need to forward it on to your colleagues. So without further ado, we'll go ahead and get started.
Okay. Thanks very much, Leah. So as Leah said, this is a presentation that I gave at USAID last week, part of our brown bag, our GHI brown bag series, which are a series of presentations we've been doing for about a year and a half now, every couple of months or so, looking at different Global Health Initiative principles and talking about the role of information and monitoring evaluation in those. So the presentations are based on our work, but not exclusively on our work. They're bigger picture presentations than that. So this particular presentation is Beyond Indicators and Reporting, Monitoring and Evaluation as a System Strengthening Intervention. And this speaks primarily to the measurement, monitoring, and evaluation principle of the Global Health Initiative. Just to give you a little overview for what I'm going to talk about this morning, or this afternoon, I guess now, I'm going to start with a little bit of background talking about demand for monitoring and evaluation and some of the tensions that come up when we think about monitoring and evaluation and the needs for monitoring and evaluation systems. I'm then going to talk a little bit about progress that has been made, and I'm going to look at that at the global level, but also draw on a couple of country examples from our work, particularly Jamaica and Côte d'Ivoire. Then, based on those examples, I'm going to talk a little bit about lessons learned and opportunities and finish up with a few conclusions. Now, I'm going to focus mostly on the HIV/AIDS arena in this particular presentation because that's where a lot of the recent efforts have focused and where a lot of our experience has focused because of the large investments in HIV/AIDS in the last few years. But many of the principles and the lessons that come out of that, I think, are much more widely applicable than to HIV/AIDS. So why do we do monitoring and evaluation? And I perhaps start off by saying that monitoring and evaluation is very broad. It means a lot of different things. But talking about it in its broader sense, there are a couple of major reasons why we do monitoring and evaluation. One is related to accountability and funding, and that's where a lot of the drive and demand for monitoring and evaluation has come from in recent years, wanting to know what funding is being used for, whether programs are do as they said they were doing, looking at the accountability, looking at reporting, and a lot of the drive for indicators and reporting particularly comes from the accountability and funding rationale for monitoring and evaluation. That leads to a couple of follow-ons from that. One is that there's a concern of what measured gets done, and you'll see here that's a common phrase to talk about what's measured gets done. So people then worry that if they're not measured, they won't count. So this is some of the incentives for monitoring and evaluation for some of the indicators and reporting demand comes from wanting to measure, to focus on things, to get things done, but also a fear that if you're not measured, you won't count. The second rationale for monitoring and evaluation is related to program management, learning, and evaluation. And that's another important rationale for monitoring and evaluation. Understanding better, are programs doing what they were supposed to be doing? Are they achieving their benefits? Are they reaching the people they were meant to reach? How do I invest scarce resources? That's increasingly a question that comes up in the current economic environment. And how can we improve programs in the future? So there's a whole host of questions around program learning that and evaluation that are reasons for doing monitoring and evaluation, having information, having data to inform decision making. Okay. This demand for monitoring and evaluation is manifested through a number of different global policy initiatives. Back in the 1990s, under the GPRA Act, the Government Reporting Act, improving governments and results for governing for results, led to results frameworks in USAID, which many people are familiar with. Also organizing and looking at what programs are supposed to achieve and then having indicators to track progress against those results. The Millennium Development Goals targets that were set in 2000, another example of an emphasis on measurement and reporting and monitoring and having targets and goals. And that leads to a demand for monitoring and evaluation to monitor those targets, those global targets. In the 2000s, we also saw the PEPFAR initiative and the Global Fund for AIDS, TB, and Malaria that put a lot of emphasis on measurement, tracking progress, having targets, measurable targets. And in the case of the Global Fund, also looking at using that data for performance-based financing. More recently, WHO has developed a general M&E framework for their work. The Global Health Initiative has installed metrics, monitoring, and evaluation that also highlights measurement, monitoring, tracking progress, setting targets, and reaching targets. And then the USAID evaluation policy that was launched last year takes a perhaps a different perspective in terms of looking at the role of evaluation in global health programs and aim to strengthen the evaluation of programs, which provides more detailed information. So I'd say most of the early work essentially focuses more on the monitoring, and then the last, the evaluation policy, is more focused on evaluation in the monitoring and evaluation world. Now, despite this heavy emphasis on monitoring and evaluation over the last 10 to 20 years or so, there's also a sense of a weak M&E system, all this emphasis that at the country level, monitoring and evaluation systems are weak. And there's examples here where that's been reflected in the literature. The Ainsworth et al. Talked about the World Bank evaluation of the multisectoral AIDS program in the early 2000s. And this, for those who aren't so familiar with the MAP program, the multisectoral AIDS program, that was an initiative by the World Bank as one of the early AIDS initiatives that focused really around from the mid-1990s to the early 2000s. And in an evaluation, a retrospective evaluation of the MAP investments, highlighted the lack of monitoring and evaluation systems, or weak M&E systems, that really limited their ability to draw some of the conclusions they were looking to draw in the evaluation. More recently, the Global Fund commissioned an impact evaluation, 5-year impact evaluation, again a retrospective evaluation of Global Fund investments, and came to similar conclusions in terms of highlighting major data gaps in countries that really limited the ability of the evaluation to really look at what they wanted to look at. And that's documented in a report by Macro International, who led that impact evaluation, with a fairly extensive discussion of some of the challenges and limitations in the data that was available to evaluate the Global Fund interventions. In another recent article, Greg Pearsman and colleagues highlighted that in just over half of Global Fund grants in sub-Saharan Africa, remedial actions were listed for the M&E side of things. So concerns around M&E systems were pretty widely seen in Global Fund grants as well. So that begs the question, why are M&E systems weak? We've got a lot of attention on this. There's clearly a global demand for monitoring and evaluation. There's clearly a global demand for data and data. So why are the M&E systems that still weak, and why do we see these problems? Well, I think to think about that, it makes sense to step back a little bit and look at what we really mean by a monitoring and evaluation system, and what are the components of a monitoring and evaluation system. This diagram is one that many of you will be familiar with. It's the 12 components framework developed by UNAIDS and various other organizations at the global level to look at how do we define a functioning monitoring and evaluation system for HIV/AIDS? So although it was developed for HIV/AIDS, I think it applies equally well to other program areas. Within this framework, you see, as its name implies, there are 12 components to functioning M&E systems. At the center, in red, is data dissemination and use, which is the ultimate function of monitoring and evaluation systems. If we think back to the advocacy and the learning and the program decision making, all requires use of data. And so that's the ultimate function of monitoring and evaluation systems, is to have data to inform decisions, whether those be and for accountability and for funding. But in order to do that, the blue circle, the second circle out, reflects things in the information system, pieces that have to be there in order to have the information to disseminate and use. You need to have surveys, routine program monitoring, you need to have research, but you also need to have a database to manage all this information, and you need to have supervision and data auditing to maintain the quality of the data. So that blue circle is kind of the technical components of the monitoring and evaluation system that actually generates and organizes and manages the data and the information that can then be used. But even beyond that, there's an outer green circle here, which relates more to the organizational pieces that need to be in place in order to have the blue circle and the ultimate use of the information. So there we're looking at things like human capacity, having organizational structures to support monitoring and evaluation, having an end that's costed and so forth. So that green circle can be thought of as representing the organizational pieces that need to be in place to give you the actual information generating piece in the blue circle that leads to the ultimate use of information. So there's a lot of pieces to the system. They all have to function. They all have to fit together, hence the puzzle motif, in order to have a functioning monitoring and evaluation system. And within each of those pieces, you can drill down and there are more pieces underneath that. Another way of thinking about, particularly that blue circle, another useful framework in thinking about M&E systems and what contributes to their strengths and weaknesses, is actually think about that blue circle a little bit more closely and actually look at some of the health information data sources. And this diagram is taken from the Health Metrics Network and kind of illustrates some of the components of health information systems, the different kind of data that's out there. So on the left, you've got more population-based, so left as I'm looking at it, I suppose, there's the population-based sources such as censuses, civil registration, population surveys. But at the same time, and going the other way, you have more institution-based data sources, such as records, service records, financial information, cash accounts, and so forth. So there's a lot of different institution-based information as well on the actual services and also community-based information systems as well. And so there's a lot of pieces, even within that blue circle of program monitoring, which is one piece of the puzzle, of routine program data, there's a whole lot of different information systems underneath that. And underneath surveys and surveillance, there's a whole different set of information systems underneath that. Okay. So what this means is that you've got really an intersection between monitoring and evaluation systems and health information systems. But it is an intersection. Systems, functioning monitoring and evaluation systems require information, and that is the things we just talked about in the HMN diagram, routine health information systems, surveys and surveillance, rapid assessments and so forth. And those information sources are part of the health information system. But there are other things in monitoring and evaluation that have to happen in terms of the use of information and organizational structures and so forth. At the same time, in health information systems, one of the functions of health information systems in the country, taken in its broadest context, is monitoring and evaluation. But health information systems also have a number of other functions, including health system management, planning, budgeting, and so forth. So monitoring and evaluation is one of the functions of health information systems, but it's not the only function. And similarly, health information systems are an input to monitoring and evaluation systems, but there are other things you need beyond just information. And what this means, I think, this relationship, is that there are some tensions and challenges that arise because of this intersection, but not complete overlap. One of the major concerns for health information systems is the proliferation of indicators that is driven by some of those accountability and funding requirements and concerns over if you're not measured, you won't count, and we really need a lot of information to be able to make the kind of decisions we want to make. So some of those valid functions of monitoring and evaluation systems have led to proliferation of indicators, which then potentially overwhelm the ability of health information systems to provide the data and can actually stretch them and undermine the data quality and also undermine the other functions that health information systems have beyond monitoring and evaluation. And that's been well discussed by Brummer and Stansfield in the 2007 in The Lancet. There's also some practical implications and tensions in that when we change either at the global level or at the national level or whatever level, or the program level, because it makes more sense for our monitoring and evaluation needs, that has a number of implications that ripple down through the health information system depending on exactly what the data source is. So, you know, changing wording at one level can mean that whole forms have to be redesigned, they have to be reprinted, and potentially thousands of people have to be retrained in how to put that information. So there's a connection between decisions around the indicators and the information systems underneath. Sometimes the data that we want for program monitoring requires generating accurate and complete data from large numbers of recipients. sometimes countries may have hundreds, if not thousands, of small organizations providing services, and you need to collect information from all of them. And that is a tremendous challenge when you're trying to do that across hundreds of information of organizations, potentially for multiple services. And that was a challenge that was particularly noted by in the Global Fund Impact Evaluation. And ultimately, there's got to be a balance between different needs. There are global reporting needs, there are national needs, there are subnational needs for information, for monitoring, for evaluation, for other forms of decision making. And there has to be balances between those, because sometimes they're all valid needs, but they are sometimes in competition with each other, and particularly in competition with the ability of the health information system to provide that amount of information. And then there are also balances that need to be weighed between the accountability and reporting and funding needs of monitoring and evaluation systems, and sometimes the learning and functions where different kinds of information may be needed and balances have to be struck. And ultimately, this comes down to concerns over burden of data. And that's a common issue that's often discussed when both in monitoring and evaluation meetings and discussions, and also in health information system meetings. Because ultimately, particularly when we're talking about information coming from routine systems and program reports, it's frontline health providers that have to collect this information, and they're also doing a lot of other things as well. And so there has to be sort of balance and recognition of the burden of data. And then that data has to be compiled and reported, and that can become at other levels of the system as well. So we have a bit of context for what monitoring and evaluation systems are, and what some of the challenges and tensions that exist just inherently in trying to build these systems. So, and then we've heard that there's a widespread belief that monitoring and evaluation systems are weak. So at the level, what progress has actually been made? Well, there are a number of levels, again, to that response. First, we can look at the global level. And at the global level, a lot of progress has been made on harmonizing standards, the multilateral participation, the multilateral agreements that have gone on to harmonize indicators. The first of those was in 2000, at least in the AIDS field, was in 2000 with the guidelines produced by UNAIDS. And it's kind of interesting that the Ainsworth article that I mentioned earlier, Ainsworth report that I mentioned earlier, which was looking at the World Bank map evaluation, really straddled the period in which that guidelines were being produced. And one of the challenges they had found was that they had a hard time comparing from the mid-1990s to the early 2000s because the indicators changed. What was collected in 1995 and 96 was not comparable with what being collected in 2002, 2003. And that is really a reflection of where we were in the state of the field of HIV/AIDS interventions at that time, and that the standards were still developed. There was a lot of tests of different ways. We were still figuring out the best way to measure things. So I think a lot of the efforts that have gone on around 2000 and subsequently have tried to address that question, and I think that's probably less of an issue now than it would have been in the past. Efforts have continued with the UNAIDS Indicator Registry that was launched a couple of years ago. And similar efforts have gone on in other fields than HIV/AIDS, such as in malaria, and there are others as well. Now, the risk of that is then the focus gets fixated on the indicators alone. You have to have standards. You have to have clear definitions. Those definitions need to be comparable over time and over countries, depending on the purposes of the indicators. But at the same time, as I've already alluded to, there's a lot more than just the indicators. And some efforts have also gone on trying to develop some more standardized data collection tools. One could speak to the surveys as a particular example of this. Things like the African Health Survey, the multiple indicator cluster surveys, and so forth, have done a lot of work on harmonizing the way they ask questions and coming up with very standard ways of doing that. But also, the WHO has worked on 3 interlinked patient monitoring systems, and so there are other examples in the routine area. But in general, probably less attention on the standardizing data collection tools than on indicators. And that, to some level, may also be appropriate because countries have to adapt to their own systems as well. To actually look at the global level of progress, it's kind of a little challenging to think of ways to do this, but there was one effort in 2009 that looked at the data reported in the National Composite Policy Index, which is part of the UNGAS reporting for AIDS, and UNAIDS did some analysis of data reported through UNGAS and looked at the M&E system component of the policy index. And this shows for 85 countries that reported the policy index in both 2005 and 2007, shows quite a bit of progress in having fundamental M&E components in power. This refers to the green circle in that 12 components framework. You can see that in 2005, only about 40% of countries had a national M&E plan. This is for HIV/AIDS, and that was over 70% by 2007. Similarly, you can see more countries have M&E units, more countries have M&E working groups, and more countries have an HIV database. So there has been progress in putting in place these fundamental components of the system in different countries around the world, at least for the HIV side of things. But still, you know, a third of countries don't have an HIV database, and about 25% don't have a national M&E unit. So there's still progress to be made, although a lot of progress has been made. Another way of looking at the functioning of global M&E systems for HIV is to look at the UNGAS reporting and looking at the availability of indicators, how many countries were actually able to report against the UNGAS indicators. And this is for 2009, based on up to 147 countries. Only countries that considered an indicator relevant were included in the denominator. And in general, the higher availability for things like blood safety, antiretrovirals, prevention of child transmission, you know, more than 80% of countries who said it was relevant were able to report some data on those indicators in 2007. However, the picture is quite different. At the other extreme are information on most at-risk populations and on kind of prevention programs. Those that are, the availability is much less there, with only about 30% of countries who said that it was relevant able to provide report on the UNGAS indicators for manual sex with men and injecting drug users. And I think this reflects a number of things. One that is noticeable from this is only there are a lot of other indicators here, and the full paper gives the reporting rates for all of them. The blood safety, antiretrovirals, PMTCT, these are clinic-based services that there's a lot of effort on putting in place those facility-based information systems. They often, some of them are a tier in certain clinics only, they're not necessarily throughout the whole system. So these are facility-based indicators, whereas at the other end, when you're looking at most at-risk populations, the difficult populations to measure, they're difficult, they're often hidden populations. Prevention interventions are more tailored to the specific context than, say, something like antiretroviral delivery. So there are a number of differences in the types of indicators that we're talking about at each end of this spectrum. Okay. So let's turn now to having had a brief look at the global level. Let's take a couple of country examples, and we'll start with Jamaica. Jamaica is, as most of you know, a relatively developed country in the Caribbean. It's a relatively small island country, not as small as some countries in the Caribbean, but compared to, say, Nigeria or some of the larger countries in the world, it's a relatively small country. And Jamaica is not a PEPFAR-focused country, but it is a country that is working on HIV/AIDS, gets global fund money, and has an active HIV/AIDS program. And in 2004, it began looking more systematically at its monitoring and evaluation system for HIV/AIDS, and was found it starting at a pretty good base. There are a lot of information systems already in place. They had antenatal care surveillance since about 1982, knowledge, attitude, and practice services since around 1990, surveys, and then they had program information reported from the early 2000s, much more recently. But they had a lot of data in place. They had a lot of data systems. They had a lot of capacity for information and collection. But it was disparate. It was different people reporting to different donors on different indicators. It wasn't very coordinated. And so thinking about how to pull that together into a national system was where a lot of the efforts began in around 2004. In 2004, an M&E unit was formed. in the Ministry of Health, right? So, and then, and they began with a baseline assessment of the M&E system. Following on from that in 2006 was the stakeholder capacity assessment, which looked again, looking at what was in the baseline, moving on from that, building on that, and came up with a number of different recommendations and led to defining the roles and responsibilities more clearly of the different organizations, different stakeholders in the M&E system, also prioritizing the gaps that have been identified for this assessment and in the earlier baseline assessment. Leading out of that came the 2007 establishment of a monitoring evaluation reference group, which is a national coordinating body for monitoring and evaluation. And that group in turn consolidated what was more than 130 indicators that were in use in the different information systems into 30 core national indicators that the M&E unit would coordinate and manage. And based on those 30 indicators then led to the development of an operations manual that looked at the forms that were needed, developed indicator reference sheets for all these for the 30 core indicators, went around and looked at how this information was actually being gathered in the field, found over 46 data collection forms in use, consolidated those into to 25 required and recommended national standard forms that map back to the indicators, also looked at the different protocols that were in place and consolidated those into national standard protocols. So really a lot of streamlining and organizing of the system that took place 2008-2010. And then once that was all done, there was a rollout of the M&E manual, of the operations manual. And just to give you a sense of the process involved, more than 1,000 people were trained between 2007 and 2011. And over 80% of the people with M&E responsibilities were using at least one of the forms by 2010. So one thing to note is this is slightly overlapping processes. These things were going on together. So some of the assessment and work on consolidating the forms did a lot of awareness raising, and therefore some of the forms were already getting into use. So these are processes that go along together a little bit, but there's also a certain sequence in here that's happening too. By 2011, the M&E working group and the reference group and the M&E unit felt that they'd done a lot of effort improving the monitoring, program monitoring, and the underlying systems. They had much better standards, much more understanding of roles and responsibilities. They were doing pretty well on the monitoring and wanted to put some more attention on the evaluation, and so they are working now more recently on impact evaluation training and looking at the evaluation component more systematically. And also looking at data use, improving data use, improving leadership, thinking about sustainability of the system, and are now working in that area this year. We'll be working in that area starting with a workshop effect next week. Just to give you a sense of what comes out of the system, this is just an example of some PMT-CT data that just illustrates that when you have the system, this is the kind of thing it can produce. A number of different data and indicator that the Jamaicans now have access to in an organized way and can produce the different kind of reports on the HIV epidemic much more rapidly, much more efficiently. So it just illustrates the kind of data the system would produce. And that is, I think, an interesting slide to look at, taken from Charlene Jarrett's presentation that she did here at Measure Evaluation a few months ago. I don't expect you to read this. It's not going to be trying to appear. I know that the writing is too small. But what it really illustrates is the complexity of the system. This is a data flow diagram. And you can see that the outer lines here represent different information systems, different pieces of the system. So and the tuberculosis investigation form, a population group HIV test, hospital monthly summary reports, the different actual system, health information system forms and reports that come into the system. The squares and ovals represent different databases that then this information goes into to be managed. Square ones are computerized systems. The oval ones are manual, and the ones where they're working on new databases or updating databases. That then gives the different indicators, come out of the database, and goes into the case management system. So there's a lot of pieces, 34 national indicators. And I think that's a to think about that 12 components puzzle that we saw. This is how it kind of maps into a much more detailed data flow and link information system with the monitoring and evaluation system. And moving forward, Jamaica is now moving into a new phase of their national strategic plan for 2012 to 2017. The M&E plan is a component of that. And they have done a systems in another 12 components assessment, which is an assessment tool that goes along with that 12 components framework that I showed earlier, that to assess the information against the 12 components. And based on that, have prioritized a number of actions for the coming 5 years, for example, working on data quality, standards of practice, use, and human capacity, because there's always a lot of turnover. So that's our first example of illustrating the process that one country has gone through to build their national M&E system to get to the kind of improvements that we saw at the global level from Rick Pearson's paper. The second example comes from Côte d'Ivoire, which is now moving over to Africa. It's a less developed country than Jamaica, but it's a PEPFAR-focused country. And this is our team in Côte d'Ivoire who've been working on the Côte d'Ivoire strengthening of the national M&E system in Côte d'Ivoire. So essentially Côte d'Ivoire followed a somewhat similar process in that they began in around 2003 with an assessment, looking at the an assessment. But I think what Côte d'Ivoire's situation was a little different from Jamaica's in that Jamaica had a lot of information already. It had a lot of the information systems. It was already collecting a lot of HIV/AIDS data through various systems. Whereas in Côte d'Ivoire, there was not as much HIV data being collected in the routine systems or in general. So they really had to look at building the information system in order to support a monitoring and evaluation system. And so out of the first assessment came a joint strengthening plan for the HMIS, or Routine Health Information System. That's the facility-based system in the country. And particularly strengthening that so that it incorporated HIV/AIDS data. So between 2004 and 2005, the existing facility-based information system forms were revised to include the new HIV/AIDS data, and then those tools were finalized in 2006. Going along with that was the development of a computer system to manage the routine health information system, or the HMIS data. It overlaps with that, but started a little bit later because you need to make a certain amount of progress on the forms and the indicators before you can start working on the database. But they did kind of work alongside. And also going alongside that, between 2004 and 2007, was a lot of training of core trainers within the Ministry of Health on the new system. Once the system was in place, then there are supervision is another key component of the system. There has to be supervision. So supervision guidelines were established in 2008 along with the strengthened system. This graph shows some of the changes in the performance of the routine health information system between 2003 and 2008 based on a sample of facilities and PRISM assessment, which is the performance of routine information system management tools. And so this is a way of looking at some different pieces of routine health information systems and seeing how they've improved. So you can see that in 2003, about 62% of districts had computers available, and that had increased to 100% by 2008. The completeness of reporting at the district level went up to about 80% by 2008. And SigVision was the computer system, which was not in wide use in 2003, but was being used in well over 3/4 of districts by 2008. So that just kind of gives you a sense of the rollout of the system and particularly the IT components of it. Looking at data use, this is just looking at the 2008 data. However, you can see the blue bar is health facilities, the reddish bar is at the district level. So about half of facilities are displaying data on the wall, but close to 80% of districts are looking at have at least some form of display. Decision data is around 38-44%. Very little feedback from the district to the facility, and about a third of districts doing supervision around the routine health information system. So there's still work to do on some of these other processes in terms of improving use of information and the supervision and feedback mechanisms. And that's why a lot of efforts recently have focused with the supervision guidelines on really improving supervision and getting regional M&E units to provide supervision, because those structures weren't in place before. I think one of the challenges for Côte d'Ivoire was that while they're working on building up this monitoring and evaluation system and working on building up the information systems to support a monitoring and evaluation system, data is still needed for decision making. They still need data for accountability. They still need to be tracking the progress in the epidemic. So what do you do in the meantime while you're building up this system? And what they did in Côte d'Ivoire was to undertake an active data collection exercise, at least for the core HIV activities of PMTCT, VCT, care and treatment at the facility level. So these were interventions that were a focus of PEPFAR, but also of Global Fund and so forth. So this actually involved a separate survey kind of data effort where 185 facilities were visited to get the data out in whatever form they had it, because there wasn't a standard national system. Some facilities were collecting paper-based information, some had computers, but the data had to be gone and manually collected and compiled. But it did lead to the first ever national AIDS report in 2005, and those reports have been produced annually ever since. So at least there was some data in the meantime, but it did take a separate exercise to obtain the data that was already out there and existed. Looking more recently, and this is just a snapshot, there are other things happening, have happened more recently. Some comparison was done between the implementing part reports and the routine health information system, and that showed that coverage was now up to 40% in the routine health information system as of 2007-2008. More recently, efforts have focused on the National Patient Monitoring System, or the SIGDEP, which is the acronym for the system itself, the electronic system for patient monitoring. And that's now in use in a little over half of the HIV care and treatment sites. And actually it's at a level at which that now it can be used to replace some of the active data collection that was happening before, because it's very expensive to go out and do active data collection in parallel to building the system. And the ART patient monitoring electronic records can now be used as a source of information for a lot of the needs, decision-making needs that are out there. And more recently, the SCMS project, which is the supply chain project working in Côte d'Ivoire on HIV commodities, was considering whether they needed to put in their own information system to track commodities, and actually, after assessing the SIGDEP, decided that it was adequate, it had the needs that they were looking for, and are going to be using that to manage drug stocks and dispensing. Now, there's a lot of work needed to strengthen it, but even if a parallel system had been introduced, that would have had to also been rolled out, and so the resources for that can now be used to strengthen the national system. So we've seen two examples, Jamaica and Côte d'Ivoire, which face different challenges, different issues in building their national HIV M&E systems. But I think there are some common themes that emerge from looking at these two countries. First is change takes time. Both of these case studies that I presented began in around 2003-2004. They've made a lot of progress, particularly in putting in key system elements by 2012, where we are now, but it's still a work in progress. Both of them are at different places, but they're still working on strengthening data quality, strengthening data use, and so forth there, and thinking about managing training and human resource turnover and those kinds of things. So change takes time. In both countries, the process of harmonizing the indicators and developing the forms was at least 2 to 3 years. So it does take time to develop the pieces of the system. Both countries also follow this cycle of assessment, planning, action, evaluation, and then assessing again. Now, this is a general cycle. You'd see it for almost any intervention. There's that kind of process. You see it in many management textbooks and so forth. But it frustrates that both countries went through this process, that building the M&E system follows that same intervention cycle as any other intervention. Another common feature of the two examples and of other examples and other countries work in is that they work on different pieces of technical issues to work on, there are behavioral issues, and there are organizational issues. So again, then that relates back to the 12 components, where there are technical and organizational components there. So while work goes on harmonizing indicators and developing forms and building information systems under the technical side, work also had to be done at the organizational level in clarifying roles and responsibilities and establishing coordinating mechanisms and those kinds of organizational developments. And both Jamaica and Côte d'Ivoire had organizational components of the interventions that they developed. There are also behavioral determinants, working on the knowledge and skills of staff and working with them to provide motivation and incentives for reporting data on time, making it of value to them. So there's different pieces of this, and this is really for the PRISM framework. It was developed for routine health information systems, but I think it applies to any of these kinds of information evaluation systems, that there are different points, and you really need to work on all three to build the system. Another observation I would make is that the Global Health Initiative principles apply. Here I'm talking about national monitoring and evaluation systems, and there are other aspects of monitoring and evaluation we could talk about. But in the context of national systems, both Jamaica and Côte d'Ivoire, these were country-led processes. There was ownership, and there is attention to sustainability. Now, Jamaica particularly is thinking very actively about sustainability at the moment. What sustainability means in other contexts, I think, is perhaps a longer-term goal. But country ownership and sustainability are being thought about from the beginning. These are national systems that are being built. They're also examples of health system strengthening. The health information system is a component of the health system. And monitoring and evaluation, is, as we've already said, is very linked in with the health information system. So monitoring and evaluation systems are a component of the country's health system. So actions and interventions to support them are health system strengthening interventions. Both countries had coordinating mechanisms. There were efforts coordinating at the country level. They benefited from efforts at the global level to develop things like the 12 components assessment tool, like indicator standards. They were able to benefit on those, that harmonization at the global level, but they also had to have mechanisms in place at the country level to do coordination and to engage the different donors at the country level. And although I haven't talked about it much, I think I did want to note women-centered information. I have not really talked about that, but it is also a component of the Global Health Initiative and one where I think countries are increasingly thinking about these information systems, the M&E systems, can provide information that can be looked at to address gender aspects of the HIV epidemic or any other health issue as well. And more attention is probably needed in that area right now. But a few countries really are starting to look at that more systematically these days. There are also some common challenges that arise out of this, about looking at M&E system strengthening over the last decade or so. One of the challenges that's commonly faced is that there's an awful lot of competition for resources, especially in the current economic climate. And monitoring and evaluation is often last in, first out when budgets are very tight and people need to cut and make up choice. So resources are always a challenge, but that's true for any area. There's always a resource challenge. Typically, while we've seen a lot of progress that we have national monitoring and evaluation units increasingly now, they are small units. They're more than one person now, too, which is used to be the case that sometimes there'd be a unit, but it was one person part-time. But now they are actually units, and they often have a few people in them. But they still have to balance the immediate reporting requirements with the longer-term M&E system strengthening that we've been talking about today. And that can be a challenge when they've got to go out and do the reporting for the Global Fund or for UNGAS or for PEPFAR, whoever it is. So they're always balancing this, and that's one of the reasons why some of these things take time, is that there are competing priorities for the M&E unit to work on at any particular time. Indicator harmonization is key. You need to know what you're trying to measure, and we talked briefly earlier that not having standards was a major barrier to the World Bank map evaluation. But harmonizing indicators at the global level is only one step. That's to be operationalized at the country level, and it's a long and intensive process involving many stakeholders at the country level to come up with national indicators. There's a lot of competing priorities. You've got to get it down to a national set that people can agree to and buy into, and that's not a process that should be underestimated. A And it's also important to remember that just having the indicator isn't enough. You've got to have the data collection system to support it. And so another challenge can be when indicator definitions change without really considering what the data collection implications of that change are. And that's been, for example, an issue for Côte d'Ivoire that's been struggling with designing HMIS forms, which was a 2-3 year process for one set of indicators. And then if there are changes, they then have to go back and revisit the forms and update them. And that's a constant tension, is balancing the evolving indicator needs. And those needs are evolving because programs and thinking is evolving. But the information systems also, that can have a lot of implications for the information systems beneath it. As in almost any area of health, global health, or human capacity is a challenge. People move, there's constant turnover, so there's a constant process of maintaining human capacity. And one of the reasons, for example, why Côte d'Ivoire doesn't have the ART patient tracking system in place everywhere is lack of people with the IT skills, the computing skills, to manage the systems in every facility. So there's definitely human resource challenges that are common throughout both two countries I talked about here, but also in other countries which are building ME systems. At the same time, there are common opportunities. I think one thing that almost everybody working in the field of global monitoring and evaluation in global health would say is that there has been a significant culture shift in the last decade. There's a much more awareness of monitoring and evaluation, much more of a desire to do it. And so whereas, 10 years ago, a lot of effort was needed to be made in raising awareness and getting people to buy into the idea of monitoring and evaluation, we're really kind of beyond that in many places now. And there's people on the ground who want to do this, that recognize it's important and want to move forward. And so that shift in culture is a tremendous advance. Although it's a little intangible to measure, it's one that I think most people working in monitoring and evaluation would recognize. As we've seen both from the global analysis and from the two country examples, key elements of ME systems are increasingly in place in countries. So we're not starting from a base of nothing. There are pieces in place. And there's a lot of willingness and energy to work on the challenges at the country level, where donors and country staff and the NGOs are coming together to really try and figure out how they can get an ME system that works for them, but still meets some of the global requirements. And there's been a number of examples at the country level of where people will come together and kind of look at, okay, we've got to keep an eye on what we need to do, report at the global level, but let's think about what we already have and come up with a creative way of giving us a system that's really going to work for us. Corresponding to that, at the global level, there is increasing recognition, I think, of some of the challenges we've talked about today, and more emphasis on building country systems and therefore more flexibility to allow countries to operationalize an indicator in a way that fits their system and the way that works for them. So there's some flexibility coming from the top at the same time as there's that energy and willingness and creativity at the country level. But one of the, I think this is both an opportunity and a challenge in many ways, that we are, as one person has said, we're past the point at which a workshop can kind of move you forward. We really need to get out and do this now. It's not about going out and doing awareness raising workshop. It's actually going out and training thousands of people, supervising thousands of people, really making the system actually work and get it in place. And that is a much more ongoing effort that requires sustained efforts and investments to implement. So to conclude, the kind of key messages here are that ME systems are an intervention. Building ME systems, or maybe building ME systems, is an intervention. It is a lot more than indicators and reporting. That's where a lot of the front end is. A lot of people see that. It's very visible. But underneath that is a tremendous amount of work that needs to go on improving data collection, improving data use, improving data analysis, figuring out how we present data. So it's not indicators and reporting, it's a whole system, there's a whole lot more underneath that. And it intricately links back to the information system. Another point observation I'd like to make, is that lack of information is not the same as lack of indicators. Now, what do I mean by that? This, coming back to that observation at the beginning, that ME systems are weak, there's a lot of need for information, for decision making, for advocacy. and frustration that the information isn't available for the kinds of decisions people want to make. We live in an information age where people expect to have information. But sometimes the reaction to that is, okay, we should get an indicator. We need an indicator. We don't have what we need to make decisions. We need more. We need another indicator. We need a new indicator. And sometimes the data is actually there, or we do have an indicator, but we don't have a data collection system in place that can collect that information. So we have the indicator, but we don't have the data collection system. Or we have an indicator, but the data collection system to collect it is so complex and difficult to implement that it's not a very feasible indicator to collect in practice, because it would require such a complex and intensive intervention in the data collection level that the data quality would always be poor. It could be that we have the data and it's just not analyzed and looked at in the right way. We may need, for example, some of the Women Centered program. We have a lot of information already out there. If we could just, but it's not necessarily organized and presented in a way to really take that gender lens and really see how you could use the information you've already got. Or maybe it's there and it's analyzed, but it's not being presented in a format that's very useful for people to be able to relate to. So my point here is that lack of information for decision making can have a lot of different causes. It's not necessarily that we don't have an indicator. So when we are frustrated by not having information that we need for a particular purpose, we need to really be thinking and diagnosing very carefully where the problem is. It may actually be a data collection problem as much as anything, or a data analysis project problem, or a data use problem. And lastly, as we've seen from the examples here, it does take time and money to build ME systems, as it does with any other intervention. You need systematic and sustained investment over time, and a surprising amount of it when you think of all those different information systems that have got a function to give you even 30 indicators. But at the same time, we live in a world where resources are tight, the economy is a challenge, as we hear every day on the news, and so we also have to make realistic choices and really think about where the strategic priorities are for information, as in any other area of health. But recognize we need information, we need it to make decisions, we need it to tell whether the other things that we're doing are working and to help us inform our investments in other areas. But information itself is an investment that has costs attached to it, and we have to set priorities there too. Finish on an optimistic note. And again, not another slide that you're not supposed to read and try and understand, it's just an image, is despite the challenges that were out there and the frustration that we don't have all the information that we want, we have made a lot of progress. We have more information about more things, more readily available and in more formats than we've ever had before. And these information systems have changed. The capacity in countries is changing, the awareness in countries is changing, and therefore we have made a lot of progress. Even though we may still need more data, we'd like more information, we have made a lot of progress. Just for information, references if anyone is interested, and I do want to finish with some acknowledgements, because putting this presentation together required me sending out a lot of emails and relying on people to respond, so I really want to thank Stephanie Watson-Brown, on Team Nasu, Alan Mubari, for all their information they provided and questions they answered as I put together the two case studies. And I also want to thank Tariq Azim, as I took a number of the photos are from his Ethiopian presentation. Okay, thank you.
Okay, we'll go ahead and open up for discussion. Thank you, Sean, for your presentation. For those who are joining on Adobe Connect, go ahead and raise your hand using the icon at the top of the screen. But here, please go ahead and we'll first
attack.
You mentioned about the constraints. How can the ME system help provide? I noticed from the beginning that the presentation of ME is being a need for providing information for accountability. But that's coming at it from the donor point of view. What about from the stakeholders' point of view? The sense of feedback from the population served by how ME can solicit information from the population served about how their needs to be better served. So it seems to be coming going one way. And I don't know, you know, that's addressed in perhaps one of the 12 components. Another question, so that's just a comment, but one question I had is, given the constraints that we're all facing, and the need for having more information that's usable, how can we make sure that we build in sustainability up front as opposed to supporting M&E work when the monies are there, and when the money's not there, hoping for the best? So how can we support our country programs, ensuring that M&E is not just something that they buy into, but they actually support, even when the money isn't there?
Okay, I just make perhaps a quick observation on the first one. I think you're right, this presentation does look a little bit from the donor level, because a lot of the drive for the national M&E systems has come initially from a lot of the needs for accountability at the donor level. There are accountability issues at the lower, at the subnational needs and at the community level and towards participants as well, I would agree. And I think I didn't have time to go into a lot of detail, but one of the bullets mentioned the needs, that there are different needs at the global, the national, and the subnational level from a measurement perspective. And I think it's a challenge. I don't have the answer to. I think it's one where everyone deals with on a daily basis, is how you balance those needs, because the kind of information you might want for very local level accountability to your community and your participants may be different than what you need for your accountability as a global fund, for example. But they are all accountability needs. Now, I was in Mali in December visiting one of the health facilities there, and they have a routine information system that we're working on strengthening for, and part of that is for accountability to donors around the malaria initiative in particular. But they also, at the facility level, are using some of the information they're collecting to use that for community-based health education and talking about, well, look, we're seeing a lot of people coming in with malaria now, so to talk to the community about what they're doing about malaria, what they should be doing, and using it to generate conversations. So I think there are opportunities to use the information in different ways, and for different audiences, whether you're talking about reporting up to the Global Fund, their accountability to their taxpayers, whether you're talking about a facility thinking about its community of clients and accountability to them. But there has to be balancing, because there are opportunity costs too. If everyone's so taken up with reporting, they don't necessarily have time to do the different kinds of activities they need for accountability to other levels. So there is, again, a challenging balance there, and finding the right balance point definitely one I think that a lot of places are struggling with. I've been given such a long answer to that one, I've forgotten your second question.
Sustainability.
Again, sustainability is, actually on Facebook, one of my friends on Facebook posted a chart that the word sustainable was unsustainable. It's a chart of the counts of the number of times the word sustainable has appeared in sentences over time, and it's kind of a linear group. And they were projecting that by 2050, that the only word in the sentence would be sustainable. Yes, clearly sustainability is a big area of emphasis. I think in both of the countries, the examples that I talked about today, they were trying to work within the national systems. Yeah, but ultimately, as in anything, funding has to come from somewhere. There are governments, like in Cote d'Ivoire, for example, the government is funding the regional monitoring and evaluation positions. They decided they didn't have anyone at the regional level to do the supervision. Those are government positions created and funded by the government. In Rwanda, they put the efforts for costing their M&E plan into the Global Fund application. Now, of course, the Global Fund is a different donor, but you know, there are different ways of diverting the funding streams. And I think it is a matter of thinking about building international systems, about costing these things and setting priorities, and then looking for, you know, resource generation and having a, you know, making that a conscious part of the planning as well, as it going to be funded. Because that does change over, it's simply because funding streams and funding agencies change over time. At the same time, since a lot of the requirements come from donors, there's also a need for the donors to recognize that there are costs associated with these systems. And I think there has to be some strategic priorities set can I think that's what I was alluding to at the end, that maybe we can't have all the information that we want. We've got to make some choices and set priorities and build from that.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for your time. Excellent. Thank you, Sean, for your time.
Thank you.
We'll go ahead and make the available.